Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Well, I hope so.
Well, you know, you can only hope. You can,
yes.
You can only have aspirations. That's what I say. You know,
that's what I say.
The future is just guesses and bets.
Unless you've got Peter Zion on your side here. I just heard he's on the Joe Rogan podcast this week. Did you hear that?
I did not. I wasn't following Joe last week.
Okay. Well, there you go. I just listened to it this morning. And you've read the book many times. So his new book, I believe it's called The End of the World is Just the Beginning. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I've read it five times.
Five times, yeah.
Start to finish. Yeah.
Okay. So he's very optimistic about North America in the next 10 to 15 years. And I think he's right. I mean, based on everything. all the reasons that he's...
Relatively speaking... Yeah, relatively speaking, if you take the whole world into account, I take all my chips and put it on North America.
And I think that the North American outpost of Cloudlandia is really that's the winning combination. Being able to, you know, access and be a citizen of Cloudlandia with mainland outpost in North America is probably as good as it gets.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Over the past week, I've had conversations with Mike Koenig and Peter Diamandis and with Gord Bickman, who's our podcast manager here at Strategic Coach.
Yeah.
And we were just reflecting on the sudden emergence of ChatGPT.
Oh, my goodness. I want to talk about it.
Yeah, and they've gone, you know, I mean, they went from 0 to 1 million users in 5 days, and they cross 2 million even quicker than that.
Yeah.
And it's noteworthy. It's very noteworthy.
It really is noteworthy. I mean, I heard this little bit of stat, which is, you know, kind of frightening actually, but it's saying that GPT-4, which we're using GPT-3 right now, but GPT-4 is an improvement of 500% or 500 times more powerful than GPT.
I wonder who measured that.
Well, I think what they measure it is in terms of the lines of general knowledge that it's been uploaded with or programmed with.
Yeah.
I saw a thing that it's throttled right now because of the computational power required to access the, you know, the huge pool kind of thing. It's out there, like apparently that GPT-4, like the bigger database of all the known knowledge is 500 times bigger than what the general knowledge. So it goes from the equivalent of a super smart high school student to the smartest, you know, person on earth by a factor of multiples, you know, and that's kind of, it's amazing. I think that the big thing, I think that I was having great conversations about this week because I've been experimenting with it, and it's crystal clear that the art of AI whispering is going to be a skill of the future.
I think at the end of the I've had about two specific podcasts with Mike Koenig, and you know, my general approach on it is that it's a wonderful first draft for any kind of thinking.
Yeah,
you know, we actually did one right on the program. Mike had Ray I, which for the folks who don't know what that is, it's just a transcription. It's a voice-to-print transcription service. So if you just put otter, O-T-E-R, like the animal, AI than it will take any conversation, for example, the one that you and I are having right now. It'll differentiate when Dean is speaking from when Dan is speaking, and then it'll do its best to capture faithfully in print what we say audibly. And then if we're using a term that it doesn't quite get the first time, later on, it'll get it right. And once it gets it right, it goes back and it corrects itself. If it hadn't really transcribed correctly the first time, then it goes back and it does
it. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, but what we did is we just took a section where we had done some interesting discussion, and he captured it, and then he put it into GPT. He said, "This is what I want to do with it. I just want to, you know, break what was said here into five bullet points that are the compelling part of it." And, you know, 2-3 seconds later, we had our GPT. So we've officially made GPT a partner on the podcast.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm stunned by the whole thing. Like, I think learning the prompts and learning the ways to get what you want. I mean, I've been having like just conversations with it. I asked in one session, list 10 book titles that would be successful right now. And it just, without thinking, like literally as fast
as... It doesn't think. This is the first thing you have to understand.
Yeah.
It's not thinking the way that you and I think.
Right, exactly. So it was as fast as the words could be typed. It was typing, one, the future of work, how the gig economy is shaping the new world. And number two, mindfulness, and something about mindfulness, and something about minimalism and financial success, and all the 10 really like compelling book titles.
Yeah.
And then I said, okay, write a 10 chapter book outline for a book titled The Future of Work, How the Gig Economy is Shaping the New World, end quote. Yeah. And it listed out, you know, chapter one, the history of the gig economy, and then 1, 2, 3, kind of one sentence, you know, summaries of what could be included in that. Chapter two, how technology is enabling the gig economy. And then 1, 2, 3, and then chapter three. And it was just like, and then I just kept going deeper. I said, okay, write a 1,000 words on the history of the gig economy, including, and put the three things there. And then, you know, it went and just blah, 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 blah. You could literally like write the whole book that way.
Yeah.
It was really something, you know. And then I said, oh, give an example of how that might work. I mean, it was so, I've just been experimenting. And I think that the better that you get at the prompting, the better it's going to be. You know, you could definitely assemble and then have an editor, you know, put it all together and polish it.
Well, you know, and I, to a certain extent, if you look at the 90-minute book, which is your platform for writing really fast, quick book, and my quarterly book team, the way we do this, we've actually been doing this like in rudimentary form.
Yes, exactly.
And so, for example, I just completed the interview process of the current book. So this is a book that goes to the printer at the end of January, and then it'll be ready for the first week of March for all the people in the program. And it's called Capitalism Dash and Everything Else. And the main point about it is that everything else is an ideology, but capitalism is a methodology. So capitalism is a way for someone to zero in on their unique individualism. Why are they unique as an individual? Why are they unique? And then go through 5 growth stages where you put a price on what your uniqueness is worth, your time, your talent, and the results that you can produce. And your interaction with the world then creates property, that there's unique relationships, there's unique projects, there's unique things. And this is property. Every time you take your unique ability and interact with other people's issues or their opportunities or their problems, dangers, opportunities, and strengths, you create new intellectual property. So you have pricing, you have property. And then once you establish sort of a base that you really like of interacting with the world, then you work to make your results more productive. So faster, easier, cheaper, and a bigger result, which over time, you're always bringing in more money than you're putting out for the effort. That's profitability. And then when you do this with other people who are doing the same thing, it creates prosperity. And then I create little fast filters for each of the chapters. And then I'm interviewed by Shannon. Mm-hmm. She's always hitting me with things I haven't thought about. And this all gets transcribed by Otter AI. And then it goes off to a writer and to a to an editor. And we come back with finished copy. So I'm getting the chapters are coming back. And I don't change a word. It's really interesting because we've been together now. As a team, we've been together for 28 quarters. And the editor and the writer are so good now at taking my fast filter outline and combining it with the transcript of the interview. And they just do a great job. And it comes back sometimes. I said, boy, that's really interesting. I don't remember saying that, but that's a really good point that we've just picked up on. So to a certain extent, and you and I both had a challenge to write a book in a week way back when, and we both did. We both did. And but the thing that this is doing is that it's using the knowledge base of the world to add to our project.
Well, that's, and I found that the distinction is that I think this is going to be absolutely under the right guidance, fantastic way to write books with objective knowledge of things that are known and, you know, factual kind of things, right? The technical challenges or explanations of things compared to subjective knowledge, which is something new that you as a creator are bringing into something, right? Like, for instance, writing a book about, I've just had it, we've got, I do a lot of work with financial advisors, we've got a book about Social Security, which just like is a handbook to answer people's questions about Social Security. So I was playing around and had just trying to prompt out the input for a book on Medicare. Same thing, which is known knowledge. This is just like sitting down with somebody who knows everything about Medicare and having them asking the questions that need to be addressed. And I think it's going to be fantastic for those kinds of things. And then amplified. Because a financial advisor with years of experience is going to have different, they're going to have some subjective opinion on what is the best way to do. And I was saying to someone, it reminded me of the centaurs, the chess, you know, the top chess rating people now are not, it's not AI and it's not a, you know, a chess master alone. It's a chess master paired with an AI-enabled chess master who's able to have the computing power, the processing, the access to, you know, probability of what the right move is, with also the ability to override or sense the subtleties or the nuances of what's happening with the human that you're playing against, right? So there's that. I'm fascinated by this, you know, the ability for the
Well, you know, output. Here's the to a problem that was posed to you very early in life. If only you would apply yourself, Dean. And you've been waiting. You know, you've been waiting. I mean, you've been waiting for the right tool to come along that would present to you things that are worth applying yourself to.
Yes. And I think that the bigger challenge is going to be that I think it's safe to you know, this all happened end of November, right? So it's really only been 60 days that it's been like foisted on us. And everybody now, you see, you know, the world
feel
is now
foisted upon.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a good, I think I that I everybody feel, now you're being, what I guess what we're being foisted upon now is all these, the experts on how to, you know, everybody now is becoming an AI expert, right? How to, all these AI side hustles and how to, you know, maximize. There's a whole industry of people teaching you how now to capitalize on AI. And I think that it's going to enable a huge increase in the output of content. And what unfortunately
do you mean that the number of fart jokes in the world is going to increase as a result of this?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And but what has not changed along with it is our capacity to intake more of the information.
Yeah, you know, that's a constant.
We're moving at 60 minutes per hour, and that's all we can do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And well, so our brain can only impact.
Yeah,
so
I mean, we were, Gord Vickman and I were on our GPT podcast, and he said, do you think this will make useless people valuable now? It'll turn consumers into creators. I said, oh no. If you're a consumer, it'll just by your consumption by orders of magnitude. But if you're a producer, it'll amplify and multiply your productivity. So actually, it's a great fork in the road. And it's not even a fork, it's actually perpendicular.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's like you're all traveling along the same road, and then you come to a road where you either go to the right or you go to the left. It's not a fork, you know, it's not a fork. It's that non-productive people will now be able to multiply their non-productivity exponentially.
Now, what do you think? Like, I wonder about this. The exponential, the, you know, the curve now of available content, if you talk about the creation date of things, that there, we're helpless against the current amount of content that's created brand new. We're, you know, there's constantly new stuff coming in. And I wonder, like, what happens with this backlog of inventory of content? Like, how many books are you in now? In your, this is your 30th quarterly book?
33
quarterly book.
And I had 13, so, and I had 13 before this, before I started the quarterly series. So I have 46, had done 46.
Right, so I'm just talking about the quarterly books now. So the quarterly books, you have a built-in distribution network. It's part of the value of being in Strategic Coach that everybody in the program gets a copy of the books?
The book.
Or is it just in 10 times in free zone, or everybody in the program?
Everybody.
Everybody. Everybody in the program.
Yeah, we have out clients who stay in touch with us, and they can download the ebook version. You know, we don't send it out as a physical book. But go ahead.
So what happens with the consumption? So I imagine that it starts out that there's a spike in consumption of the most recent book, that everybody has access to that. But what's happening with book number 9 right now? What else? What's happening with the body of work, the catalog that you have now of these 33 books? Are they on Amazon?
They're on Amazon.
What's happening with them?
They're being purchased. And we're not trying to make money on these books.
Exactly.
We're just, it's just a program reinforcement. Number of things is that they all get generated for the most part by a conversation that will happen in a coach workshop. Somebody mm-hmm. says something, and I immediately translate it into a book title. So I think in terms of book titles. And so what I'll do then is I'll say, is there a tool here? Is there a thinking tool that I can, you know, I can take this idea and just use the idea as a doorway into in a next workshop? And what I have this year is I'm not doing, tomorrow will be marked the first time that another coach has coached 10 times. So usually, as you remember, pre-COVID, you guys would come in on a Sunday night and we'd have a dinner at our house.
Dinner, yeah, exactly.
And then next day would be the 10 times workshop where not all the free zone people would be there, but there would be free zone, and then there would be 10 times clients. So it's a big room, you know, it's 60 people. And so tomorrow will be the first time that I'm not doing that Monday. Brower is the coach tomorrow, and he's the first one. This is the historic event. It's a historic event. And this was all put in place with a decision halfway through 2021, where I said, you know, the end of 2022, I'm not doing 10 times workshops anymore. I just said it. I said, because the free zone would be growing. And in the meantime, I've created the new Lifetime Extender program. And I've also created, now just coming up in March, will be the IP Value Builder. And so what I needed time, I could see that things were developing where I wanted some time back. And the way that I do that is I just put a date in the calendar and say, after this, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's the last that I really think of it, because then the team has to say, well, if you're not going to do it, who's going to do it? And I said, that is a question to be answered. It's a problem to be solved. And literally, I have spent no time whatsoever on this transition, but we have five coaches all trained, ready to go. The schedule's all laid out for next year. But what I did say is that during this 22 year, I will do the 2-hour Zoom calls for the 10 times community. So I did first one just on, when did I do it? On Friday. So day before yesterday, I did it on Friday. It was terrific. We had 70 people there and it was a great
day. Yeah.
But what I'm using these little 2-hour ones now is to test out a new tool every time. So I have a brand new, or a significant modification of a previous tool. And then as we go along, and I'm approaching the end of a quarter, and there's a Canadianism, which don't get ahead of your skis. Okay.
Right, yes.
And what I make sure is that I don't line up a whole bunch of the next 10 quarters. You know, I'm going to do this book and this book. And what I'm doing is that I'm just paying attention to everything that's happening during the quarter. And I'm writing one book anyway, and we're getting near the end of the book. And so I said, I wonder what the next book will be. And there's already a schedule for my first interview with Shannon. So I've got a deadline. And then I'm pretty clear about what number 34 is right now. So I've already done some thinking on it. And it'll be called Geometry for Staying Cool and Calm.
Geometry for Staying Cool and Calm. I like that.
Yeah. I talked about that last podcast, the three rules. The geometry consists of three rules that you configure differently. And the first one is everything is made up. And I guess GPT is certainly going to. I bet the amount of stuff that's been made up in the last 60 days amazing. You know, I think it's just an amazing amount of new stuff that just got made up. And then the second one is nobody's in charge.
Yes, I like
the GPT is proof of that. GPT is sort of proof of that. Who's in charge of this? Who's giving permission for people to create that? You know, is this the World Economic Forum in Davos? Are they the ones who approve that millions of humans can do this? And then the third one is life's not fair. And so I asked Gord to do a little bit of investigating on who's using this GPT thing. Do they have any profile? And then one's emerging already. It's 95% men. Okay. Right off the bat, it's 95% men. And of the men who are using it, 95% of them are Americans.
Okay. Wow.
So wow, if you thought things were unequal before, you haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So this is really,
and America is just the kind of country where this sort of thing can happen real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really, I mean, it's something. It just kind of wrapping my mind. You know, I think what Peter Zion's really talking about is just the dying importance of geography and mainland. You know, what was the power thing, the power shifts of, you know, of mainland domination or mainland success.
Yeah.
And land and people and resources and transportation and manufacturing, all of those things which were all, you know, the elements of mainland success are now really becoming less and less relevant. I didn't realize how, you know, he talked about the people in China as the biggest problem, just the population, you know, the policies that they've had for so long of one child and mostly, you know, which really brought mostly men, which they don't have the population ability to maintain the what they need.
Even the Chinese in the authorities in China, who, you know, I don't know how one gets to talk about this when you're in a country like that, but they're saying that the one is that there are 100 million less than has been published before. The number was 1.4 billion, and the Chinese said that we overcounted by 100 million.
Right.
I mean, how do you miss 100 million? How do you miss 100 million? Well, you got to know what it's like in China. And the thing about it, and they figure that of those 100 million that they miss, 70 million of them were women. And with the one child policy, what you had is they can do sonograms and they can tell whether, you know, the fetus is male or female, and they aborted all the females, you know, and only the males got aborted. Yeah, but the problem is that 20 years down the road, you got yourself a real problem, because where are the women for the men to reproduce?
That's exactly right. That's what they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, men are expendable. Men are you and I and all the other males, I learned a new word. It's a British word, and it's in the Prince Harry Tells All book that's coming out on Tuesday, which basically is already out there. But he was in Antarctica a decade ago or so. And I don't know quite how this happened, but his penis got frostbitten.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. And okay.
So he had a frostbitten penis. But the British word for that, there's a Britishism, it's called a todger. He had a frozen todger.
You know, frozen
I thought
todger.
That's a neat word. Todger.
Todger. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But the thing about this is that if you have one woman, if you have 100 women and one man with a working todger, you know, I mean, like it actually works, you could create a whole new civilization with 100 with one man and 100 women. But try it the other way. Try 100 men with one woman. And what you have is a really tired woman. By Friday, the woman is really tired.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's what China has done. They've overloaded it with, you know. And the other thing is that the way they had developed their economy, the proportion of young women and young men are not even close to each other in the country. Okay, because the high-tech firms, which are, if you look at the map, the central city, I mean, the central city of China in relationship to the world is Shanghai. And it's got a big river system that goes in from the from the straits between Taiwan and China, but it's the eastern coast, or the eastern coast of China, which is the only coast part of China which is east coast. Right in the middle of that is this big river system that goes in, and Shanghai is the first big city, and then you take it from Shanghai, you go out to the water, and then you go south and you go all the way around to Hong Kong. That's the real tech part of China. That's the technology part of China. You know, all the big tech companies. Foxconn has 200,000 workers, you know, and that's a Taiwanese company. I mean, it's a Taiwanese company that works in China. But you look at the workforce, and I bet 80% of their workforce would be women, not men. They live in, you know, apartments or, you know, condos or whatever five or six,
dorms.
Or six of them. But there's no men. There's no men, you know, so they, and they're looking, you know, they're looking, they're not looking for some farmer from the far stretches of China. They're not looking that, you know, women always go up in grade when they think about who they want to spend the rest of their life with.
Well, that's, you know, the interesting thing. I saw Scott Galloway was he was talking about how, you know, this would fit in Cloudlandia as dating and mating has really shifted to online, that there's only that all, it's so disproportionate that only the top 5% of men online and on Tinder or on the dating things are getting any attention on the profile. So all the women are competing for 5%. They're giving all the attention to the 5% of guys that are, in Cloudlandia, are visually attractive or height, because it shows by height and those kind of things, that most men are not even getting an opportunity because they're not getting any attention from the women. And I've heard on other podcasts, women, you know, talking about the same thing, that it's affecting the women negatively because they're all chasing after the same 5%, but their standards are so high that I heard one of them say that all women only match or choose or swipe on deem 20% of men even attractive, so you see these, all these unintended consequences, I think, right? They're all coming to.
Yeah, and they're, you know, Peter, you mentioned Peter Zion, and from his first book, which he's written four books, so the last one, which just came out last June, which is The End of the World is Just Beginning, he's always talked about this, that there's only five major countries, you know, that you would consider advanced countries, that actually have an okay demographics. In other words, that they're having enough children that they'll have, you know, between ages 20 to 50, usually. That's your real key demographic is your population between 20 and 50, because that's when children are produced. These are the biggest consumers. These are the biggest producers. Okay, and you want your numbers to be even with each other. You want men and women to be even with each other. Another thing is that he said the problem, if you don't have enough 20-year-olds, he says, the problem is it takes 20 years to get one.
Wow, yeah, that's true. Right, know, and it's already perpetuating. How are you going to speed up? How are you going to get the...
Yeah, and they're expensive. They're expensive.
Yeah.
And I grew up on a farm, and I wasn't expensive. I was free labor. But the moment you move into a town, two things happen. These, you know, the space you have to grow up in is limited, so you can't have, you know, you can't have seven or eight kids in a condo. And the other thing is that they're not producing anything. You know, I mean, right from as early as I can remember growing up on the farm, that you had a job. So you had, you, there were jobs already assigned for you. And you're, in my case, I was number five. So the older four, boy, they were, there was no, I tell you, there was no vacation for them at all. They worked in the fields, you know, and so then you could have really big, you could have really big families. And the problem with China is, you know, they've just made so many bad guesses and bad, you know, so many bad bets. And then they had the, you know, for a while there was a huge immigration, the outflow. I mean, Toronto has five Chinatowns now, you know, the city of Toronto has. You know, I mean, there used to be the old Chinatown, which was on Spadina, Lower Spadina.
Right.
Yeah, but now there's one Girard that's just before you get to Scarborough. There's one out in Brantford. There's one in Markham. You know, they have 250,000. Chinese have 250,000 out there. You know, that's the population, wow. Chinese population of Markham. You know, yeah. Sort of the area, not necessarily the town.
Right.
But the five countries that Peter Zeihan talked about, he said U.S. is fine. U.S. is fine because the baby boom generation really produced. They had a lot of children, the baby, American baby boom. Yeah. And that's the millennials. Uh-huh. The millennials are the children of the baby boom generation. Not as big as the baby boom generation, but the American baby boom was 65 million. 65 million were born during
that. Right. Wow.
In 20 years. And you're one of them. You're one
I would say I'm actually...
You're just across the line.
Yeah, I'm the second year of Generation X. So 1966. So my generation from 65 to 1980, there's actually less of us by a factor of, you know, 15 million or something.
Oh, yeah. And the other, I was 2 years the other way. So you're 2 years on the other side of the boomer generation, and I'm 2 years before the baby boom generation. So I was
the
generation.
First silent generation, right?
Yeah, we were the first American generation from the beginning that was smaller than the one before. And it was because of the Depression and the Second World War. And so I've always, you know, there's always been more than enough of everything, you know, my life.
Because rode the wave. You rode the crest of everything.
I mean,
you know, that was being prepared for the abundance post-war. Yeah. I just look historically, like I'm so fascinated to see, to just imagine what are we looking, you know, if we're looking back from 2050 right now on this period of time, like what does that mean that China is dying, or that it's, you know,
it's
that's the words that he used, that China's
gone. I mean, Peter Zeihan says they're gone by 2030. He says
within the decade.
You see it right now. Yeah,
well,
and that's historically
that
been
I
true
wonder,
of China.
Like,
this is the longest that there's been a China in one piece.
And
it's always
the same about Russia. That's like
post-Russia.
Putin. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you start to think, okay, so what does that mean? Like when large swaths of the globe are, you know, off the grid or off the main, depopulating or out of service. Like what does that, again, I guess it's really, you know, other areas are resurging. Like it was so funny, James Drage, who's a friend, I'm sure you know James.
Oh, yeah. He's said 100 times.
That's right. Yeah, 100K times, yeah. In Genius Network, right. And so he was hearing us talk about Neom, about Jesse, my guy Jesse with the VCR formula project for Neom in Saudi Arabia, bringing in the top photographers from Getty Images to do, you know, to document this whole region kind of thing as a, having access to their capability as amazing photographers and the reach that they all have individually. And so James was talking about that, but just so happens he's working on a project that's involving Neom as part of it, down to, and so I was able to connect him with Jesse, Jesse knows all the people that James has been communicating with. But you start to see that these other areas, you know, emerging, like it doesn't seem like, I mean, the ambition that Saudi Arabia has for Neom is going to rival what they've done in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and the Emirates kind of thing. They're building this whole new area of the world with, you know, huge vision and plans for it. And yeah, bottomless buckets of money, seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going here on Peter Zion. He thinks that the Saudis are driving down a one-way street that you can't turn around. And he said part of the problem is that they're not having children, like Saudi Arabia is not having children. And anybody who does any work in Saudi Arabia is from outside of. So yeah. If it's menial work, it's from Pakistan. You know, they import people from all over who all the work, and then yeah, all the expertise is coming in from, you know, the Western countries and everything else.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're basically
why Jesse is there.
Yeah, they're still basically a tribe with a UN seat. You know, they're a tribe with a flag. They're still a tribal kind of tribal organization. They don't have any democracy as we would understand. Here's a really good example. Just to throw a couple more pieces on the board for future mm-hmm. discussions. A couple things that I think if you put it together with GPT, are number one is what happened in the Congress, the United States Congress, the 5-day marathon where it took 15 votes to get the speaker. Okay.
Yeah.
And everybody has their opinions about this and saying, you know, what a cluster. Add the second word if you want. And, you know, what a mess, what a thing. Actually, it was a marvelous example of democracy in the open for 5 days, because it was all deal making for 5 days. I mean, after the third vote, they were redesigning the party. So the first day was 3 votes and he lost all 3 votes. McCarthy, Kevin,
yeah,
who was the speaker. But by the 4th vote to the 15th vote, the entire new structure of the party was being created. The rules were being changed. The people who get in charge of committees, and whatever agenda McCarthy had when he started on the first vote, his agenda was gone, and that agenda became a party, you know. And but the other thing is, there were no news about the Democrats during those 5 days. The GOP had total mainstream coverage for 5 days. And, you know, and it's all negotiation. I mean, politics is start to finish, it's all negotiation. You know, we want this, you want that. And they had a constant that, first of all, he wanted to be speaker. And secondly, there was no alternative except him. But he had to get the votes, and he couldn't get the votes. So I just put that out there. That has not happened since the 1860s. You have not had that many votes had to be taken to get a speaker in, say, so 1860, 163 years, I think it was. The other thing is what happened on New Year's Eve in this town in the Russian-controlled territory. of Ukraine, where they brought in a whole bunch of new troops and they put them in a school. The school was, you know, and they put them in there. And all the officers went off for a party, but while they were gone, four rockets. Oh, geez.
Oh, no.
She's not any smarter than she was last week. I don't think that Siri's really up on GPT, because they haven't done it yet. So anyway, four rockets, and these are these amazing American rockets, the HIMARS, and they just noticed that a lot of personal phone calls using personal telephone calls they're not supposed to use their personal phones. So the soldiers, but the officers went off for a party and everybody was phoning home to, wish Happy New Year and everything. And the casualty figures, even the Russians admit 89 were killed and probably two or three times more casualties than deaths. And it was just a case that this integrated system, which is an intelligence system, which starts with an American AWACS plane, which is 200 miles away, 250 miles. They're not even in the battle zone. Just picks up on all these phone calls and they say, we got a cluster of them. They're all Russian. They're all phoning back. It'd be good to send a couple rockets right there. And these rockets, if you look at a little table you have right next to you where you're talking to me today, they would just put the GPS position of that table and that's where the rocket would hit. So you've got that as, this is an entirely new form of warfare, and it's all based on Cloudlandia. It's all Cloudlandia based warfare, except the actual rockets itself are very much mainland, and where they're hitting is very much mainland, but everything in between is Cloudlandia. And so my sense is that some remarkable normal events are being radically changed because of Cloudlandia. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to the process of government with GPT. And I'll give you an example of who's scared about this. So on Thursday, the Toronto School Board, so the Metro Toronto School Board, banned GPT.
Oh, really? So that's like...
No, for anything. It can't be on any of the school networks. Any of the school networks. And I said, you just made every student in your system just totally interested in GPT.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you just banned it. It's like Barbara Streisand's, it's like the photo of Barbara Streisand's Malibu house,
Yeah.
You go to Wikipedia and look up the Barbara Streisand effect. And there's a whole description that she noticed that a picture of her house from height was published, and she got her lawyers to seize the photos, see if she can seize the photos and everything else. And it just went viral around the world. Everybody knows what her house looks like. So I don't know if this was subtle on the part of the Toronto School Board. I suspect not, that they would ban it. That they would ban GPT. And this way we'll get them all on GPT. I don't think that they're that far advanced.
Funny thing in the age of the transition to GPT, to all of the knowledge being available to be able to, write essays and do those things. I heard from Peterson talked about instructing GPT to write an essay about a 13th rule, adding a 13th rule to his book, 12 Rules for Life, written in a combination style between the King James Bible and the Tao Te something, which it wrote without any thought or effort and would have been completely, thoughtful and would have completely fit in the thing. And I thought, like what you just described, that this is, it's here. It's inevitable. It's going to change the landscape. It's not nobody needs to research and write an essay anymore when you can, you know, write a, you can instruct GPT to write it. But how's that? That's just handicapping the students for the new world. I mean, that's a new capability that's in there. And I think it would be so much better if the school system embraced it and taught AI whispering as a way.
Yeah. One of our key team members, marketing team members at Coach, Linda Spencer, we were having, I have my project managers for Christmas party, and we were out, and she was talking about her husband, who's a professor at Seneca, I think, Seneca College. And he got onto GPT when it first came out for himself. And he said, you know, I'm just going to make sure all my students know this right away. And I'm going to encourage them to learn how to do all their coursework in GPT. And that way, none of their work's going to be late. You know, it's going to be late. He says it'll be grammatically correct. It'll be, spelling will be correct. And right. I'm creating a GPT process for grading their essays. So as soon as I get their GPT essay, I'll run it through my GPT course grader, and that'll speed up giving grades out. Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, there was a professor, they showed him, you know, 10 examples of essays, and he said right off the bat they have a C+. He said they just have a C+ for initiative, right, and for effort. And he says, I can tell that they're on the imagination scale, some of them are 10 times more imaginative of how they've used GPT. So maybe that's what you get graded on from now on.
I had GPT write a scene from a movie about Johann, and where he's telling his best friend about his discovery, and his friend is skeptical. And it writes this. It writes the scene. The scene opens in wherever, you know, with Johannes Gutenberg and his best friend Heinrich. And he's telling Heinrich how. So
this is like,
you know,
this is like a Bob Newhart routine. This is
it,
like
really,
a Bob,
was,
remember
it
Bob?
Was, so, yeah.
Remember the Bob Newhart did? He did two routines. One was Abner Doubleday describing a new game called baseball. And his whole routine is, he says, Abner, what's a foul? What's foul? I mean, why do you call it foul? You know, why is it fair and foul? And then the other one is Sir Walter Raleigh coming back from the New World with a whole boatload of leaves. Called tobacco. So, and what do you, Walt? Here comes crazy guys, crazy Walt's here again. Jeez, you know, this guy's, you know, he just has the wildest ideas, you know, and they're just hilarious. So you just hit on, you should just write one up on, somebody has this new innovation called GPT, and you put it in front of a whole bunch of skeptical
people. Yeah, in the
people.
Style of who's on first. Yeah, exactly.
There's going to be a lot of wasted time here. Yeah. And of course, everybody's work on GPT is adding to the knowledge base of GPT.
Yes, of course. That's it. Because now then it's learning when it gets praise and when it gets instructed on how to clarify something. It's like the collective wisdom of all of it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just so,
Gord Vickman was telling me that they just had it do a bar exam for one of the states, and it passed with flying colors.
Yeah, I think I saw that they gave it an SAT test, and it got I forget what the number was, but it, you know, did really well, like better than, it was a really good 12th grade student kind of thing. You know, that's where it's at.
Well, I'm really interested at A360 this year. Peter has one whole day on AI.
Is it later this year? When is it? I remember seeing it on my calendar.
It's in March.
Yeah.
March, yeah. And they've added a whole day just for AI. They've added a whole, so they have a whole day now for longevity and a long day for AI. But one of the speakers is Salman Khan, you know, Khan Academy. You know, so he's from Toronto.
I know Khan Academy.
Yeah. And he's talking about how all the work that he's done over the last 25 years, he's created thousands and thousands. His company has created thousands and thousands of little 6 and 7 minute lessons. But now you could create a whole school curriculum, you know, with GPT, you know, these are Salman Khan lessons for first graders, you know, any subject area. And they just put together the curriculum, and you know, it's really interesting. Steve Johnson, who's a coach client, 10 times coach client from Toronto, he created a software that can reschedule 27,000 people within 1 minute after delays or cancellations, you know, but he said the big problem is that the routes that the airlines have just don't make any, because if you take a big one like United, well, you go back 50 years, and that's probably a combination of 25 different airlines that have been taken over through mergers and acquisitions. And what came along with them as part of the deal were their schedules, you know, where they went and everything. But probably after COVID, they don't make any sense whatsoever. So you just put a GPT, just say, what's the best schedule for our entire airline? And please have it 80% complete. I'm going to go for a pee by the time I come back.
You're right. we're living in amazing times.
Well, it's not fair. Everything's made up and nobody's in charge. So
everything's made up and the points don't matter. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, I got to compliment both of us for not getting hooked on too much labor intensive activity.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right.
That we've avoided obsolete labor intensive focus in our life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited now. I mean, this is, you know, the great news is when you incorporate GPT into my sphere now as applying my expanded self, SELF, my sphere, energy, leadership, and finances.
Yeah.
This is, imagine if we applied ourselves.
Well, it is. And, you know, we're going to have to learn how to, I was just looking up before I talked to you, the social impact of Gutenberg's press, 1455, you know, and what it changed almost within the next 100 years in Europe. Mm-hmm. And first of all, it was not a peaceful Europe. I mean, not that Europe ever has been, wasn't a peaceful Europe. It just disrupted everything, just that people could now publish. And, yeah, and, you know, we've had jumps along that, you know, right up to Mr. Beast with YouTube, what he was doing, this one individual with capability.
Yeah.
But I got a feeling that this, anything that's happened really fast, really big, really disruptively in the past, this one has a chance to be infinitely bigger than all of them put together.
Especially because of the platform where we're coming from right now, that everybody's already connected. We're already, you know, the way we're able to zoom around Cloudlandia and information is able to zoom around. I mean, you just hit it on the head that five days and 1 million people are on ChatGPT. I mean,
And I think the thing that I wrote down the first weekend we were starting to talk about Abundance 360. We didn't even have the name, but it was in Silicon Valley. And Peter Diamandis invited us and any coach people who wanted to come, because he and Ray Kurzweil were doing a series of videos on the future. And Ray Kurzweil was talking, and he was talking, you know, we're not too far from the, in the future where the computerization will be, have a higher intelligence level than human intelligence.
Yeah.
And so I wrote down something, and I've looked at it almost monthly for the last 13 years, that humanity is always infinitely bigger than anything that humanity creates. Okay. And that, and another thing I says, it's not humanity that's trying to keep up with technology. It's technology that's trying to keep up with humanity. Mm-hmm. It's an endless discussion point, because who's ahead here and who's trying to catch up, you know?
Yeah.
And my sense is the 2 million or 3 million now, might be, I didn't check this morning, 3 million who are using this are creating an incredible amount of new stuff that people who are in positions of power know nothing about. So what, the, I mean, it's like the, whoever the, you know, the key people are at the Toronto School Board. They have no way of even knowing how to think about this, let alone to use it for themselves.
Right.
And it's not that, it's not the technology that's getting out of hand. It's the humans using the technology that's getting out of, you know, it's getting out of hand.
Yeah. Wow.
Well.
Well. I'm always.
This is a historic. This is a historic podcast.
Yes. I think everyone, every, you know, the developments are moving along so fast. I mean, Cloudlandia is completely different.
Yeah, from, yep, yeah, yep. I think I remember when I first met Babs and I did a strategy circle for her on her business. She had a health, nutrition, massage business. She was right in Chinatown in Toronto. And I had met her at a, you know, at a conference, and then I told her what I did. And she says, you think you could do that for my business? And I said, sure. Take 2 or 3 hours. And I took her through the strategy circle. And when we got finished the strategy circle, she had her next 3 years all planned out. And she said, this is going to be really big. And I said, your business. And she's, no, this thing you're doing, the strategy circle. She said, this is really big, what you're doing here. And you know, I was just scrounging for money. You know, I just had a neat way to make money where I didn't have to know anything. And anyway, and we just had our best year ever. And, you know, we have 130 team members, and we have 2,500 clients this year. And profit wise, we're right up to where we were the year before COVID. So we, our profits were equal to what it was in 2019 with less revenue. But if you take everything that we've done, all the capabilities we've developed, and multiply them by GPT, how big could it be?
Right, exactly. Amazing. Well, it won't be long now. You're going to be down here very soon.
Yeah.
Less than 30 days away.
And we're going to have
now.
A panel.
Awesome.
I have five panelists. You kick off the day with your update, and I'll send you a fast filter of what I'm thinking.
Okay, perfect. Okay, yeah.
And you will have done your virtual free zone by then, too. So.
Yes, uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all very exciting.
It is, you know, but I've had 3 GPT-specific podcasts this week, and that's an indicator that, you know, 3 million are using it, 30 million are talking about using it.
That's the truth. Or experiencing, the 300 million are experiencing, is it live or is it Memorex, you know, is it real or is it ChatGPT?
So what are we going to do with this? Mr. Edison, what are we going to do with this electricity thing, this illumination? Tell me again.
Oh, boy. I know. Exactly.
All righty.
That is something. All right. Well, have a great week, and I'll be here same time.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be back in Toronto next week, so I'll talk to you then.
Dan, bye.
Bye.